Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to talk to you about Ahsoka, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Warren. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts and your Star Wars pals. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hello! Super surprised that this was a Mandalorian episode, but okay.
We are all constantly surprised. Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Dan. Hello, Kat. Hello, nerds.
Hello, Dan. Hello,
hi,
Tony.
Hi, Kat. Hi, Tony. Great.
Doctor.
Covered this. We are here to discuss episode 7, Dreams and Madness. An episode which I was just looking up, I was curious, is directed by Geeta Vasant Patel. And I looked her up because I was curious and was like, oh, she has a weird filmography. She was an associate screenwriter on The Fast and the
Fast
Furious.
Fast and the Furious.
Blue Crush, The Rundown. But then it was in 2014 that I jibed and I said she was the director of Meet the Patels, which Kat and I did watch. You remember the documentary about with the...
Oh, that was cute.
It's a very funny...
I enjoyed that.
It's basically about her brother. She films her brother like... basically trying to get married, like being forced to go through arranged marriage stuff, and like there are all these like gatherings for specifically like the Patel clans and stuff. It's very funny and charming. And
she
she's got a bunch of TV work too that she's
done. But it's all over the place in that she has done like sitcom stuff like Fresh Off the Boat and Superstore, and then also prestige TV like House of the Dragon and, you know, The Magicians, which is somewhere in between.
Runaways.
So, that's
runaways.
Pretty all over the place. I think you can't anymore. So, sorry. I think
that what do you mean you can't anymore?
I believe it was disappeared from Disney. So, yeah.
It was on Hulu. It was one of the weird...
Was that the one that was the... it was based on the comic book?
I've read the comic book. The
comics were supposed to be very good.
A bunch of kids find out their parents are supervillains and run away. Hence, Runaways.
We watched one episode of it.
We watched an episode of it.
We did.
Yeah.
We just never got it.
Did we like it?
We didn't watch any more
of it,
so not that
much.
There are shows that I love I just never watch again, right? Like The Crown, I had to stop at a certain episode.
Love is strong.
Love is a strong word there, Kat.
Anyways...
There are shows that you've seen that you've never watched another episode of.
There are shows that I have watched, enjoyed, but then for some reason got distracted and never continued.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately,
let's
not
spend
this show.
This podcast trying to fix your problems. Let's just go to work on this hammer and tongs. Nope, Dan is saying we're doing something different today. What are we doing today, Dan?
No, but I got a good one. No, keep going, Dan. Keep going.
We're going to talk about this episode, Dreams and Madness.
Ahsoka, Star Wars, huh?
An episode
Dreams and Madness, tag yourself. I'm Dreams.
I guess Madness?
This podcast is Madness.
Dan, you get to be episode 7?
I'm Ant. Yeah.
Or the Ant.
It is my name, just rearranged, so that's fine.
That is the most boring acronym of your name yet.
Anagram, please.
So
this episode opens with a mini play that's on Coruscant, in which Hera...
It did have a little bit of a like a student theater production aspect to it.
Hera's in
Star
deep
Wars
trouble.
Is great, everybody.
Hera's in deep trouble because she disobeyed orders, and Senator Ziono is really angry and is clearly set up to be like jerk face senator who
is
means well probably, but is just kind of a jerk.
Thankfully,
who can
Carrie
save
Fisher
them?
Was available.
A cameo can save her.
Yeah. Okay, cameo.
C-3PO arrives and basically says that Leia signed off on all of this. And the whole court's like, guess there's nothing we can do. And they let her go.
Because she's in charge of the defense council. She's in charge of the defense council, which makes me question, which council is this?
Yeah, what is this council?
Judiciary?
Maybe this is the like disciplinary council. It did raise a lot of questions about like how does your government function if somebody could just send a droid to be like call it off.
We all know what happens to the New Republic, so none of this should be a surprise.
Yeah, I guess I like knowing, because there is the, you know, we see Leia in Return of the Jedi, and then we see Leia in the sequel movies, and she's like back in the, like a jungle in a bunker, and I'm like, doesn't she get to be like in the government for a little while? And the answer is yes. We don't get to see that because they haven't decided to recast Leia, but it was nice to know that like she gets like an office for like a couple of years before she's back in a bunker with the new rebellion. So I mean, this felt kind of like we need to include Hera to remind you that like we set her up as an important part of the show, and even though we have now split the plot in half and it's unclear if anything that is happening with Hera matters,
it does. It's not going to. Sure. There's no way. There are so many. I kept turning to Dan, being like, "How many episodes are in this series? Eight? Are you sure it's only eight?
And this,
how do you do all this?
This scene, which is, I feel like pretty forgettable, is longer, I feel like, than it needs to be. It also, it's both longer and shorter than it needs to be, in that it's a decent amount of time to spend on stuff that seems like it doesn't matter, but also is too short for there to be any stakes or drama. I don't particularly feel concerned about Hera's political career, so I'm like not worried that, like, you know, she's gonna get kicked out of the rebellion. I don't know. I guess I'm never like thinking, where is C-3PO? that is never a thought that has occurred to me in Star Wars media, is like, where is C-3PO? Why aren't we spending more time with C-3PO right now?
I had two issues with this. One, it's never as jaggy as I wanted to be. Jag of all, or like that Star Trek episode where there was like full on, just like, that is what this should look like when you're in court. One, C-3PO seems... Exactly. C-3PO seemed shorter than he usually does. Did anyone else
Anthony
that bother
Daniels
them?
Is getting short.
And then, well, was that Anthony Daniels?
Yes, I don't think so. Indeed it was.
Really?
There's a picture of him that was just sent to me right before this, recorded by someone else.
Because I thought the voice sounded off, too.
Oh, it's 100%.
I didn't think he was still in the suit even for the sequel movies. I assumed that he's just a consultant. I did think that C-3PO looks short, especially next to Hera, but then I figure, who do we usually see C-3PO next to?
It's Mark Hamill, yeah.
Mark Hamill or and Carrie Fisher and R2-D2, all relatively short folks of different levels of shortness, Mark Hamill is not a large man, so.
My other frustration is the fact that Hera's a general. I don't think the writers know what generals do.
No.
Because they're just like, yeah, she's just out there with like fighter squad. She's like, she's pushing paper behind a desk, guys. She's a
there's an interesting topic here that we don't really broach, which is the tension of being a general in the rebellion, where you're legit like, okay, we're kind of scrappy. People are getting made generals left and right to lead, like Han and
Lando. We talked about this before. Everyone's a general.
Everyone's
we talked
general,
about the general.
You're still out in the field doing stuff. But
Dan,
like, the new
they
Republic
heard about
can't...
my little maneuver at the Battle of Tanab. That's all it takes.
The new Republic can't support it. Is my point? Like, right? Like, yeah. There's an interesting idea in the tension of evolving from rebellion to Republic.
Yeah.
But it's not explored in a way that is actually interesting.
I agree with all those things, except Exhibit A. Exhibit A.
Proceed, counselor.
Thank you. If you would recall, the scene between Sabine and Ezra, where Sabine is catching Ezra up on what everyone is doing, she explicitly...
really far. Objection. out of order.
hearsay, Your Honor.
Sabine explicitly says that Hera is leading, like, what was the exact word she used? Like, a fleet is, I think, the word she used? Something along that implies that, like, she's instead of, like, some capital ships.
Which she was.
Which we've never seen.
No, she was in the earlier episodes, which she leaves, remember? She takes the ghost and she's like, you're in charge, random first officer guy. I'm out of here. A little irresponsible.
Yes.
generous headcanoning or interpretation, reading of this scene.
Turbo lasering.
I think the most generous reading of these scenes I can give you is that they're supposed to basically be a parallel between the state of the Republic now and the state of the Empire circa A New Hope, where, you know, they're saying, like, you know, yeah, we're building this Death Star, but we should be on the watch out. There's a bunch of these rebel factions out there, and we really need to deal with them. The lazy Imperials are like, rebel factions? We don't have nothing to deal, you know, and that seems to be basically, because there's the question of, I don't know, is the show want us to ask, like, is Senator Ziono evil or just incompetent, right? Like, is he basically, is he in league with the Imperial Remnants? I don't think it's anything that interesting.
No.
I think he's just a jerk face.
I think incompetence is more interesting. I think incompetence is far more interesting.
He's not even incompetent so much.
Like, no, actually, he's probably right.
He's not wrong about most of these things. He's just a jerk.
There is the thing where they basically keep saying there's no Imperial Remnants, and it's like, there's Imperial Remnants.
Right, but we saw that a little bit, too, with the... you know, it comes up. They mentioned specifically,
and they
Moff
literally
Gideon
talk about
Mandalore.
They mentioned Mandalore,
and we saw the whole thing with Tim Meadows in last season in Mandalorian, where they're like, "We want to send people to investigate. It's not that big a deal, or whatever." I think there's also a parallelism with.
I'm still reacting like Tim Meadows in that casting.
It was
kind of
random.
Questions.
It was very random.
There's also a parallelism. Star Wars.
There's also a parallelism.
Too much.
There's also a parallelism with the Jedi stuff from A New Hope, which is what I was thinking, which is like they're a myth, right? Like we don't really know about them. Thrawn is treated the same way in this circumstance where it's like, oh, you're chasing this fantasy that this guy exists.
What if there's some kind of chemical in the air in the Star Wars world, and so people can't remember things very well for past 10 years? The media has all been compromised. So like, yeah, there's fluoride in the water, everyone thinks it's something that they haven't seen in about 7 years is a myth.
It's Tabana gas from all the cooling turbo lasers, really. Just gets your head.
Yeah, because they're like Jedi. That's a myth, and it's like there's. Significant video, like we have video cameras. We can show you. Like, there's presumably movies about them in this world, right? You know,
is this a reference to something?
No,
lightsabers. Lightsabers can't burn enough to melt steel.
Wild conspiracy theories.
The other thing I was going to ask about this scene is: does anybody else feel like Genevieve O'Reilly gets whiplash from going from Andor to this?
I was wondering about that. Yes.
I felt kind of bad for her.
She's being very game about trying to maintain a consistency, but yet it is fascinating to watch a character who was so interesting and had so much tension in Andor, and here is literally like, we're going to give you four lines of gibberish to say. It's fine.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. I do appreciate the consistency. She's great. She's great.
She is very
She's
good.
Really great.
She's so good. It's fascinating to me that, once again, she has played this role for so much longer than the actress who played her for like 5 minutes in Return of the Jedi.
Also, she has played it in
multiple
wild chronological
Rogue
disorder.
One,
right?
Episode 3, all this stuff. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
Anyways, she's great.
So we got through the first part of the recap.
All of this.
Check.
And then we get the cold. That's the cold open.
Ahsoka!
Yeah.
The Purgles show up and run into the minefield that Thrawn's forces have left.
Oh, God. That was so, so sad.
None of them
died.
They were fine.
I know.
Well,
but until I realized they were fine, like, I was on the verge of tears. It was so sad. I thought they were just going to kill all the Purgles.
I feel like that was kind of a punch pull here. Like, not to say that Dave Filoni wanted to murder Purgles, but, like... It felt like I was also worried, which was a good tension scene, but then they're all fine. They're just like, we are out of here.
What they don't say that I had to kind of read between is like, now Ahsoka and her droid are on their own, right? And they have no return ticket, right? And they never pause to, like they don't have time for that.
Yeah, we'll
but it's like, there's
out.
A minefield, and then there's fighters chasing them, and then they're, you know, so there's a lot of people being on the run in this episode. But yeah, it is, I mean, I guess it's like they didn't want to kill a whale on camera.
That would have been awful. Maybe in Andor, not in this.
We'll have a whale debris field from all the whales that were killed at some point.
Those whales died of natural causes after long, healthy lives.
There are already whales there. We even saw the whale graveyard, which does raise a really interesting question. I didn't mention this last week. The whale carcasses have all been like basically decomposed down to the bones. Which makes no sense in space whatsoever.
Unless
they've been eaten by something else.
Well, yeah, unless there's some kind of space
food chain people.
Yeah, space bacteria and space rats.
I like that. Also, I do want to, Tony, I want to underline something you said about the fact that they don't take a beat to understand the fact that Ahsoka doesn't have a way home. Also, we're going to talk about it later, but like, is anyone ever going to tell Ezra, like, maybe we don't have a way home? Because everyone's way too happy about this.
Yeah, I think we were generous last time when we were like... Sabine's like, I'll tell you later. And then we basically flash forward to later, and she's like, I'm still not going to tell you.
You know? I'm also not going to tell you that Ahsoka's dead. I'm going to tell you that Ahsoka was dead after she shows up. Just some, there was some weird stuff there.
Being real fast and loose with details such as how I got here and how we might leave, you know, but it's nice to see you.
So
can we live here forever?
I will say one thing I thought was kind of fun in this episode is Ahsoka and Hu Yang have some good banter back and forth.
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
In an episode that contains C-3PO, Hu Yang uses a 3PO line verbatim.
Which one again?
We'll be pulverized if we stay out here much longer, which is literally from...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, wait. Actually, that's not a 3PO line. That's a Leia line that 3PO then goes, pulverized!
Yeah. No, Hu Yang is great. I mean, I was thinking about one of the things that's lovely about the Star Wars world is you can be like the most loner character that has no associations with anybody in the world, but you still have a droid sidekick to talk to for the camera.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, you know, and they have their stuff where it's like, we're going to do this trick with the ramp and we don't, you know, he's not happy about the hiding. And it's, you know, and I will say, you know, David Tennant as Hu Yang is a better C-3PO than C-3PO is in this episode.
Not wrong.
I will say the script they do with the two of them is, I think, some of the best script in the show. And one of the reasons that I'm so glad you brought up the ramp is a great example of like what I wish this show did more of that nuance and like signposting of their depth here. Like, oh, like last time you did it wrong. And we didn't have to explain last time. We just had to say there was a last time. And that was great.
We just established that these characters have been off having adventures for a decade. And you don't need to see all of them. Some of them were great. And sometimes they were boring. And sometimes they were bad. But they have history. And they have a relationship that is informed by that history. So, yeah.
Well said. And 100% agree. And I really enjoyed that in this episode.
Yeah. It's sort of an iceberg approach, right? Where you just, you only need to see the top of it that's above the water, and you can infer that the rest of it's there. But like,
so we're clear, that's not how icebergs work, Dan. That's a very dangerous way of thinking. That's how you get an iceberg.
I've piloted several unsinkable ships through iceberg fields, and it's been fine.
Oh no.
Questions.
It is, you know, in a show which has been very minimalist because Filoni's going for a very specific aesthetic with the sort of samurai film, etc. It strikes me as surprising how much of this is overwritten and also underwritten.
I'd say underwritten.
I think there's a little bit. It's like Tony's saying the scene was too long and too short. It's not.
Yeah.
It's maybe not overwrought. No, it's,
yeah. They don't. Yeah. I can't even express the word. Like there are times where I think the script is weak, where there was a great example of there was a line I pulled out that was just like, it was a pure cliche.
Prepare for the worst, but expect the best.
I was like, that's it? You're not gonna like twist it somehow and make it interesting? I was like, that's just, it was delivered with such like oomph and timing, and we went out and I was like, that was a bad line to go out on.
Great like performance by Mary Elizabeth Winstead there, but just not, she was not, there's no
not a good
on
line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, prepare for the worst, but expect the Bantha. See, now it's a Star Wars line. Is that what you need to hear?
Yes.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
I want her to deliver in the same serious like nature. Like, well, they don't think he's coming back. They're about to be Thrawn for a loop.
Oh, God.
Anyone Thrawn for a loop? Smash
you
cut
just,
away.
Chopper pushes hair out of the airlock.
I did appreciate the cut to Chopper there when they said, like, droids aren't allowed in here. And we're like, guys, again, these seem like they're sentient entities.
Also, Chopper will murder the hell out of
you.
Yep. Just do what the droid says.
So Ahsoka manages to find Sabine using the Force.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they find Ahsoka using the Force.
Leia and Luke in Empire. Yeah. So, like, that's fine.
And
I have no problem
and
with that.
Quang even says, like, do you have a strong enough connection?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
which is nice.
They seem legit.
That's
good,
nice.
Good Force use. Yeah.
Are we skipping too far ahead? There's the Ahsoka and Ezra are with the Nadi and they're like caravanning.
Yeah.
Sorry,
that was fun.
Sabine. And I like, I mean, I enjoy the Nadi as
fun.
I mean, I like their little like turtle RV things.
Yeah.
I like that they are both kind of cute, but not in a like, we are designed to sell merchandise, cute. Right? I appreciate that.
Yes.
I even like when it's like one of them, like, they get attacked and they're like, well, we all stop now and we are literally gonna, like, they might
circle
as well
the
have
wagons.
Said, circle the
I
wagons.
I love the wagons.
You know?
I loved, like, the Western, like, the chase scene going on. Like, it was very Western. It was
and
awesome.
And it goes from a chase to a, like, a battle scene, like, on a dime, where it's like, literally, our vehicles have now become the, like, blocking terrain for a fight in the trees. It's I don't know, I thought that was fun and different, and I even just like, you know, Ezra keeps talking to the various Na'vi that are like poking their little heads out of stuff, and he's like, stay in there. And it's
I have to say we get a little more time with Amon Asfandi as Ezra in this episode, and I think he's great. I think that's a really strong casting.
Yeah,
phenomenal.
He and Natasha Liu Bordizzo have really good chemistry and managed to capture the Sabine Ezra dynamic of the slightly sparring back and forth, but also a lot of genuine affection there. And I think that's one of the most successful parts of this entire episode is the two of them.
I thought they did really good, and I was like, yes, I believe him as Ezra and moving from an animated character voiced by somebody else into a live action is hard, and I think sometimes they've done better than others, but I was like, no, he's Ezra, that works for me. I will say the thing that I kind of, in addition to like Sabine just not being upfront about like what is going on, I felt like the show didn't really have anything interesting to say about like what has happened to Ezra.
Yes.
Or has very little. Because that was my thing, is like, you were like a teen kid who has been like flung into a wasteland and like lived on your own on this horrible, basically haunted witch planet where there are space wolves.
Yes.
And yeah, you found some turtle friends, but like, what did that do to you? Because you're not quite, it's not like you're, I mean, it feels like they don't have anything interesting to say about, because especially he went from being like, I don't know, like 15 to like in his mid-20s now, like that's a significant time.
He
in which
is
one
way too well
things.
Adjusted for that. Way too, it's a great point, right? Like there should be some trauma there, and just like, oh, by the way, Thrawn hunted me nonstop for the first 3 years. Can I breathe? And like, also, he doesn't seem particularly upset that it's very clear Sabine drew Thrawn to him. Like, is this a regular thing he does? Like,
yeah. I mean, there's the closest little crumb you get is that, oh, I don't need my lightsaber back. Like, that is the one
that
little
awesome.
Thing you get, which I thought was cool, where he's like, yeah, I don't do that anymore.
I enjoyed that a lot. I enjoyed the choreography of that scene where Shin tries to stab him, like cuts off his hair, like which was pretty good. It's just a good, like, you know, duck moment. And the holding back the lightsaber as he's, you know, like getting attacked, all of that was a lot of fun.
Real master of Terakasi there.
He gets thrown around a bit, so he's not like totally at the top of his game really, but he's definitely, he's kind of taking like a Zen approach, and I feel like
there's also a little bit of a weird thing where at first he's like a Zen approach, and then he's like later it's like, well, I'm going to shoot a bunch of stormtroopers because the story needs to move on.
Also, that's kind of Ezra. I mean,
yeah, that is Ezra.
I think he's shooting for like a, you know, he's trying to sort of live up to Kanan a little bit, because Kanan had that very sort of, but even Kanan at times would just be like, you know, like I'm just gonna, the only way to deal with this is a bunch of guys.
I guess, whereas like I feel like the Dave Filoni has some ideas for like what has Sabine been up to for the last couple years, it does not feel like he has that for Ezra. And especially like Ezra has basically been like stranded on a desert island, like as a castaway.
Yeah.
And he's just doing great.
He's Gilligan. Gilligan.
The bucket hat.
The hat.
I would watch like a 6-episode series about him being like, what happened to him after he got thrown through here? And like, I don't know, something with some like a little bit more grit on it. I think there is an interesting story you could tell there about things he's been through and how he came out the other side. But this, we're like, we don't have time for that. We're moving along. It's like, you don't have time for that? But that's like, that's where the interesting
that's
part
the show.
Of the story
is.
That's what we've been wondering for ages. Like, what is Ezra? What is he doing? Has he been like running in fear from Thrawn? Has he not been running? Has Thrawn not really cared about Ezra? Because he's like, well, I could also imagine a world where Thrawn's like, well,
I don't care.
Also, it doesn't matter. You can't do anything to help me get out of here. I'm going to focus on getting out of here, and you go hang out with your like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle friends.
Also,
with your
Ninja
Turtles.
Yeah, it keeps hanging over my head. This is episode 7 out of 8.
Right,
and I guess there's just I think what's tricky is the show is not what I thought it would be, in that we did not spend any time with Ezra until episode 7, right? Or significant time with with Ezra until the next, the penultimate episode. And we're still on this planet, which, like, I assume they're going to pack up and, you know, we literally saw like a loading bar, like, that showed that, you know, that's Thrawn's Star Destroyer is 83% full, or so they're going to head out soon. So, like, maybe they get back to the other galaxy.
I think that's how it ends, basically.
You think that's how it ends, and that's the setup for the movie they want to do, is that, and I guess that's just not what I thought the show would be about. Like, I thought that would be the setup for the show, not the whole show.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are a lot of theories. Yeah. I mean, I have my own theories about why I think this show has not quite managed to land. And some of them are, I think some of it is fundamentally the idea of it is like, we need a show to lead into this movie. And to me, that is,
which is not a good way to plot a TV show.
It's not a good enough reason to make the show. And I think Dave Filoni legitimately loves these characters. He created pretty much all of them. Like, so he has clearly, it is weird for me that this show struggles so much to characterize them, because nobody knows, literally nobody knows
them
better.
These are your characters.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And some of it I'm sympathetic about, because I think that even the best writer has moments where they sort of look at a thing and be like, oh, you know, this is not coming together the way that I want it to. I worry that he has also gotten to the point where he is no longer, he's kind of got the George Lucas problem of, like, he was scrappy and he made it work, and then there's nobody to
who's saying no to him.
Dave, maybe you need to rethink this.
Or like, that needs another draft.
Like,
right?
every single episode is credited to him. And it's like, I don't know. I don't think that was the case on Rebels. I think they had, I know there were other people who worked on it, for sure.
We talked about this. Both Rebels and Andor had multiple writers.
We've derailed our recap, as is traditional. But part of what I think made me kind of a little extra disappointed in this episode, I mean, we've got all our characters, which is great. So it feels like we've got all the action figures that are on the table. But there's these kind of running series of fight sequences, action set pieces. Like, we've got spaceship chases, and then we've got a spaceship dogfight, and then we're down on the planet and they're chasing, and then there's a fight, and it starts off with, like, there's a fight with bandits, and then surprise, now there's also night troopers here, but also probably it's not the big fight because Thrawn and Enoch aren't present, and there's too much. It's almost like there's too much action
there's no reason why the action's happening. It has no
impetus.
Well, and even like, do you care about Ezra? And there's even there's kind of the little button at the end where like Thrawn lost like 80% of his troops, and he's like, well, I won because it wasted their time. And I was like, I don't understand your deal. And I know you're a mastermind, and we were going to have scenes where Thrawn's going to watch stuff on a map, and you know, he's thrown off because Baylan Skrull, you know, decides he's not doing stuff anymore. He's taking a personal day. But it just felt like, why?
you are right here, because I do think this is one thing. There's a logical problem with this entire thing, is like, again, Thrawn can just leave this planet. He should not care whether or not Ezra lives or die. I think he even says, like, it would be nice to kill Ezra, but, like, he shouldn't care. It shouldn't be a motivation, because you can leave, and then they're stuck there.
He says he's wasting their time.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. He does.
He's just, again, I did like that. I take that back. You're right. You're absolutely right, Dan, that, like, this has all been a decoy to buy him time. Fundamentally, that was going on. I wish they needed a little more. But, like, I actually liked this episode. I thought it was super fun. It was enjoyable. I just wish it could have been so much more.
I guess I like the ingredients. I didn't like how it fit together. Here's my question. Like, so the whole thing is basically, like, a decoy to buy time. Is the episode itself a decoy to buy time? In which, like, please don't do it. It's one of your 8 episodes.
Make all of your episodes not decoys.
Here is
my other sort of theory about this, and, you know, again, bearing in mind that Dave Filoni worked on all the shows with a lot of episodes and therefore required writers' rooms to have this, and I think he is very strong at a big picture idea, and some of the stuff, like, I think there's a lot of imagery that's great in these things. There's a lot of interesting premise and setup on some of these characters, and I think about the arcs of characters in like, especially in Rebels, and he is very good, from what I can tell, about thinking out, like, what is the big picture arc for these characters? And, but I think when it comes down to the daily, like, writing dialogue and figuring out how an episode itself is going to maintain some sort of tension and plot, I don't think it's his strong suit. And I think he's struggling with the fact that, you know, he directed two episodes of this and he wrote the whole thing. That's a lot for one person.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It is. It's funny because he is a very George Lucas creator, right? And it's like, in some ways, that's kind of who you want for Star Wars, to give it the Star Warsiness. But it's then rough when you see something like Andor, and it's like, this is what we could have.
Yeah, I think, I think we talked about this at the beginning, of the idea that, like, again, why was Rebels so much better? And I think my theory had been, it was the jumping, something about that you can do in animation that you can't do in live action. But I think you guys might also have a point with the fact that it's the number of episodes and then the pacing. The pit you 30 episodes, the story you tell versus within 8 episodes. I did want to pitch a somewhat out there conspiracy theory that I think it's very unlikely they're going to do, but would be a delight in that it is unexpected. So I think we did mostly the recap. A couple things, just a call out. Just one, turns out, so the Night Troopers appear to be human. They didn't blow up into green dust when they got killed. So, okay, we were wrong about that. Two, we were spot on that they were trying to fill up that spaceship with something. That was pretty cool to see. That was true.
And they sure look like they could be coffin-shaped boxes.
Oh, yeah. I definitely got the what's going on here. But yeah,
they're not milk crates. That's what I'm telling you. You know?
Balin's go off on his own.
They're not full of Thrawn's old LPs.
He's off on his own, like, Boy Scout adventure. Still super interesting where that's going. We have one episode left. But he keeps referring to, like, something drawing him here or there. And I was like, well, what if Ezra found that thing? And Ezra is somehow, like, essentially turned about, like, Ezra's just been getting them all there and somehow has become one or bonded with this incredibly malevolent dark force that is the heart of the Dathomir homeworld. And he is now, like, the high priest of Dathomir, essentially, and can, like, destroy them all. At the very end, there'll be a big twist.
Or to flip that, you know what would have been an interesting plot was, like, Sabine and Ahsoka get here, and Ezra says, like, thanks, but I actually can't ever leave. I'm the good force holding the evil dark force you know, I'm the
stopper, the little Dutch boy.
And someone's got to be here and it's me. But thanks for the, you know, I appreciate the effort.
I do. I mean, similar to that, and as long as we're all like wish casting what we wanted the show to be, I kind of expected that when Sabine showed up, Ezra would be like, what are you doing here? I specifically came here to take Thrawn out of the picture. And if you're here, that means he can leave, right? Like, and just be like,
yes,
what the hell have you done? Like, that's kind of what I wanted the tension to be. And I feel like, again, the temptation was too high to be like, well, we want to see a fun reunion between these characters. And that's, you know, very different from the character that we left behind. I do want to point out, as I was just flipping through this, because I was super curious, I was looking back through the credits for Rebels. Season 2, Dave Filoni writes, he is one of three credited writers on one episode.
He probably wrote some stuff, figured out the story-wise,
but he is not a credited writer on almost any of the rest of it. So, you know, again, I feel like maybe his strength is show running and maybe not writing every episode.
Oh, of course, you say something about Dan, that was just sort of like
Ezra
what that is.
Coming, like not wanting to go back. And
oh, but I think you can still get away with the reunion, because I think fundamentally, his goal was not to get rid of Thrawn forever. His goal was to take Thrawn off the table then and there to make room for the rebellion, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you could have had a story there, too, where, like, you were successful. Like, we would not have won had Thrawn been there. Mm-hmm. It tipped the tide so that we could then have a chance, and we were there. Now we have a stable rebellion, so we want you back, but also, yeah, Thrawn is still here. It is super interesting that Ezra has not mentioned Thrawn once, has he?
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's very strange.
Especially for, like, isn't this the guy that's, like, been hunting you for years?
Right, has he been hunting him, or did he just... I kind of like the idea that Thrawn was just like, whatever. I mean, part of me is, like...
It doesn't matter. It legitimately doesn't matter.
It does, though, right? Because he knows that Ezra can talk to the Purrgil. So he has to have, like, if he... You know, if there are Purrgil here, I think he would be like, well, I need this kid. But maybe he also realizes I can't force him to do it. I have no leverage. But again, it would be interesting to talk that through. It would be interesting to hear, like, Thrawn's rationale for
how many times did Ezra try to steal a space shuttle to go find Purrgil to go home by himself? Like, because that's what I would have done if I were Ezra.
I mean, there's sad bandits on this planet that came from somewhere, right? They're not naturally occurring bandits.
It's not a, like, we assume this galaxy is inhabited to some degree. The Dathomiri were here. Mm-hmm. Like, there are bandits. There's the Noti. Like, there are life forms, but
So the one thing that's, I guess, maybe kind of interesting, but it's like, how do we wrap this up in one more episode? We've got Baylan Skull and we've got Hadi, and they have their weird conversation where he's like, you should do this thing to get a promotion. I'm out of the picture now. And she's like, okay. And then later she's in a fight and then just runs away. And I mean, that stuff is interesting, but it's like you've got a second TV show that you've grafted onto.
Yeah, I'm telling
you,
it's a backdoor pilot. It is a backdoor pilot, guys, to Skull.
Yeah, it's being him hanging out with a Nodi for like six episodes. Yeah. Like, I have some interesting ideas. No, I thought this was interesting. I think this is here where we get a fun little, actually a tidbit I enjoyed, where he refers to Ezra as a Boken Jedi,
yes,
which I love. So a Boken
I think that might have actually even been the previous episode.
It was the previous I can't remember.
I think he referred to Ezra and Kanan and maybe even Luke as, like, you know, Boken.
And that's when Hadi says, like, wasn't I the same? And she's this weird conversation of, like, dude, has she not been paying attention to what's been going on for the past decade?
Jedi teachers are not smart. They don't give you the full picture.
Yeah.
Right? They only respond to questions, and all of their answers are, like,
yeah,
in a manner of speaking.
Leave you 20 holovids. That's what they do.
Yeah.
I would, just to say, for people who don't know, a Boken is a wooden practice sword that you use for kendo in Japan, of which I actually own one. But yeah, it's kind of, I like it, sort of like a, it's not quite like a hedge knight or something, but like it has that vibe to, like, a very dismissive
thing.
There's
like Australian slang that I think is like Boken. Am I making that up?
Well, yeah, I don't know. But this is definitely a reference to the practice swords, which I thought was kind of a fun little tip of the hat. We didn't mention Anakin's also reappearance as a training video thing. I thought, again, I've really enjoyed Hayden Christensen's return as Anakin in this show. I think he's really great, and he manages to channel. He never got to play that era.
He's playing the animated version of Anakin, which is much more nuanced, lighthearted, funny.
It's all true.
Yeah, it really
it's great.
Is.
Like, it's a really good Anakin.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine him watching the show and seeing Matt Lanter playing that character and being like, "Oh man, that looks like fun. Why couldn't I play that guy?" Well, you get your chance. And it was kind of. We also get a name drop. He mentions Asajj Ventress, who has never, I think, been mentioned in live action before. Lots of little interesting sort of nuances there with him and Ahsoka, which I genuinely enjoyed. I also enjoyed the reunion with the three of them at the end. Like, again, it felt a little more humanized.
Yes.
And that was like, you know, Ezra and Ahsoka get to have a big hug, and
it's kind of
cool.
But also Ahsoka needs to have a confrontation with Sabine, right? Ahsoka seemed like BT dubs.
It's all, you know, she thought she was dead. So that, like, we're all
wiped
forgiven.
It away.
All forgiven. they do need to have a conversation. I'm a little uncertain about Dave Filoni's ability to write that conversation. But there's some things they need to figure out
There's just a lot of emotions and experiences people need to process, and, like, either show us they're processing them or tell us they're processing them. But currently they're doing neither, and that is deeply frustrating as a viewer.
Yeah, it's very plot driven. Okay, got to go on to the next thing. Got to do this
thing. So we have one episode left. What do you do in one episode?
Do you want me to guess about things that are going to happen? there's one space ring that gets you back to the other galaxy.
One ring gets you to the galaxy.
probably that Star Destroyer is going to get up to that ring, and maybe they get their ship onto the Star Destroyer, or have to leave their ship behind, and they're snuck onto that Star Destroyer, and there's going to be some stuff happening. And maybe it's even like, as they're, you know, stuff's happening on the Star Destroyer, as Hera is back, you know, sitting in meetings.
Do we need to see, you know, Hera on the other in the galaxy. Last episode, or other than just
Think there's Hera. Maybe in a cutscene.
Can I add another abandoned plot thread that I just don't know where they're going with? Is Jason going to come back? Is there anything important about that? Or did he do his job when he found Ahsoka?
I thought the Mandalorian was going to be in this at least a little bit. But maybe he'll literally be in like a scene.
Hey.
You know, I don't know. Maybe there's is the last scene of this, like, Thrawn's ship pops into our galaxy and there's a fleet of Mandalorian and Republic ships to greet him? Probably not, because that's not where you start a movie from.
Yeah. Is there a post credit scene where Hera shows up to recruit the Mandalorian a la Samuel Jackson?
Yeah. I could see that. And with
Hera sitting on the donut.
With also Captain Teeva, of just like, you in? I struggle. Like, I can totally see the plot. Like, oh, we're going to get on the ship. Everyone sneak on. And that all makes sense. And that's a great plot. And I get it. But then you have Baylan. What and where is Baylan? Like, how does Baylan's skill end? Other than, like, again, going in his Indiana Jones quest, he finds the Ark. Fade to black.
We're not even going to get that. He's just going to be like, I think I'll stay here. This place is nice. And that's it.
It's like a 20-minute montage of him, like, building an improvised shelter.
So I just really wanted to get back to my roots.
Yeah, I just like foraging.
Also, if Zeb doesn't appear in the last episode, I will be very upset.
I don't know. I do not feel like there's a...
Yeah.
He's mentioned.
Maybe in the cutscene. You know? Maybe in the cutscene in that bar.
The Mandalorian?
They're going to put him back. No, I think they put on the Mandalorian because they knew he wasn't going to be in here. And they knew people like you would be very upset. So he might be in a cutscene.
He'll be in the movie.
Yeah.
They mention him.
Probably.
They say he's training recruits. So we know what he's doing. But like... Yeah.
He's a teacher. That's what I look at Zev and I think, teacher.
He's hanging out at a bar in the middle of nowhere, the pilot's haven.
And no one's
he's
asked,
teaching.
More importantly, teaching. No one has asked, where is Kallus?
Kallus is with Zeb. They want
Yes, but Zeb is training pilots now.
Kallus is one of my favorite characters.
He's down on the new homeworld there, teaching. Yeah, the Lasat homeworld, teaching something. Meditation or something. I don't know. What do you do to rehabilitate?
For listeners who just real
Rebels.
Quick, so Rebels, Agent Kallus was essentially at what ISB. Yeah. He was the big bad or a bad guy for the first like two seasons, and then there's a great episode with like Kallus and Zeb getting stranded on an ice planet and they get rescued and Kallus basically sees the fact that Zeb is part of a family and loved. Kallus comes back and everyone's like, oh, you were gone, we didn't know you were gone. And that basically starts the beginning of Kallus defecting from the Empire, which was awesome
because they're not a family.
But also Kallus is one of the main reasons that Zeb's entire race of furry creatures was wiped out, but it turns out at the very end.
I mean, he was complicit.
He was part. He was complicit. He was
I don't think he was like. It was not just him. No. I think there was at least three guys.
But he played a large role in it, at least. Yes. And then at the very end, Zeb and Kallus. There, you can take like the ongoing plot that we keep seeing in like Star Wars is there's a planet that if you take these star charts to, you can find, and it turns out the Lasat people still live in the galaxy.
Dave Filoni loves secret
lovely
star charts.
Story.
Everyone is
very
Star Wars
lovely story.
Loves secret star charts.
I mean, it is a redemption arc from a guy who
is a great storyline,
you know, part of a genocide to like, maybe I've been a bad guy. Maybe I should be not on the side of genocide.
And sideburns, great sideburns.
Yeah, well,
good hair too. Mm-hmm. Also voiced by David Oyelowo, who is just a fantastic actor and a lot of fun. All right, so we got one
listener,
episode left.
Listener mail.
We should go on to listener mail. Let me pull up some mail from our Mastodon account, which is @acp@zeppelin.flights. You can find us there,
And you can get our Pergl and Squiggs Attorneys at Law T-shirts at HelloNerds.shop. Okay, yeah. Yep, got it. Cool.
Yeah, we got
cool.
At least one post. I'll say Jamie posted a picture wearing the Pergl and Squig shirt. Thank you, Jamie. Looks great.
Thanks, Jamie.
Let's see. Davros. Your name sounds like a villain. Sorry.
A specific villain.
A villain in Doctor Who.
Yes.
Didn't they say they were emptying the catacombs from the temple? I thought for sure that's what they said, which would support the zombie theory. I do feel like there's a mention of like catacombs below the temple.
I feel like that was mentioned. I mean, it's a temple. Maybe catacomb is just their word for hallway.
Loft catacomb.
And it's just full of like flat pack furniture. We don't know.
Catacomb is a great word, by the way. Just great word.
The flat pack furniture. Like, it's like basically this planet's version of an IKEA.
Yeah.
And Thrawn's all like, I need to assemble my couch.
He loves to assemble things.
I enjoy the little Allen wrenches. Davros also writes, after listening to this episode and talk of pacing the season, I was wondering if this was maybe pitched as a movie first and then fleshed out. It feels like there's a lot of elements, while fun, could have been cut and made for a tighter story, or was this perhaps envisioned as a trilogy? I don't know that it was envisioned as a movie, but I do think it's so weird in this era of streamers when anything can be any length, And you wonder how much of this is determined by a writer coming and saying, I got a great episode for six episodes, you know, great idea for a six episode series. And then the streamers are being like, but we really need something to fill 8 weeks. Could you do like two more episodes? Sure, I can write two more episodes. Or did he come in and say, like, I got eight episodes and this is how it's going to play out? I don't know. But I feel like I wish it was the second one. And sometimes it feels like the first one.
Yeah, I think with Boba Fett, it was very clear this was my movie and we need to like to do something with it. I
Obi-Wan
don't
too.
Know. Mm. Obi-Wan was good, though. Obi-Wan
was
like,
good,
it was
but
a,
they did.
It worked into, it actually worked as a plot, right? Yeah. That worked as a storyline. It was good. But I think also what's going on there is Ewan McGregor had a very strong executive producer role. Like, I think that is very, very clear and it shows. But I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. I think it may just be somewhat subparly executed. Scott writes, perfect timing, just finished before watching the next episode. You mentioned Enoch being a biblical reference. Do you think it's more than that? Parentheses, if I remember the book right, something about breeding with the natives of the other galaxy. Yeah, Enoch in the book is like, it involves like basically angels having children with humans.
That's like the source of like seven different Vertigo comics, right?
Yeah,
there.
Right.
none of them go great.
I don't think they're probably going that much into that, but I don't know. I that is an interesting character, and I can't decide if it's a character I want to know more about or I'm happy knowing less about.
I would like to know more.
I was surprised
with a fancy hat.
It feels, again, it feels a little bit of a waste of West Chatham. Is that him? Who has. Did West Chatham have any dialogue in this? Maybe one line of dialogue in this one?
He
was relaying some orders between Thrawn. Like, I think he was only on the phone. He was only on Zoom for this episode. It didn't seem like he got to do much. That was why I knew that the attack with the Night Soldiers was not real, because you didn't send your one guy that had a name with them.
Well, it's kind of like, even the movie, I still feel like they should have been more with Captain Phasma. Great character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never really sure why she was there.
Yeah.
And then I hope they do more with him, maybe in the movie, of just make him
and
a terrifying person.
In Obi-Wan, they had some pretty big name actors, at least middle name actors, as like some of the Inquisitors who do nothing in the background for that.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised by that. But I don't know. I think some people are excited to be in Star Wars and will, you know, and are probably happy to like, oh, I can do this for a couple days and be out, and I'm now in Star Wars, and that's exciting to me. And so they would settle for a smaller part than if it was not Star Wars, maybe.
Yeah, that's part of my theory, is that maybe Wes just called someone up and said, guys, I really want to be in this, and I'll bring all my Expanse fans to the show.
I think you say, I'll put my own armor.
I have my own armor. I've got this thing where I've got a death mask. Is that cool? I've been working on it. We don't have to say no to this guy. He's really creepy. Dave Filoni, please help us.
In costume, it was a little off.
We now have to make like 20 more of these for the other guys. You
know? Really making
weirdly the 501st like do not support him.
Yeah.
Okay, we're on to email. You can email us at acp@theincomparable.com. Michael writes, "Hey guys, first of all, I love the show. I liked this week's episode."
Michael.
You're welcome, he says. He's really prescient. I like this week's episode, although I feel like we're starting to see the action that should have happened in episode 5. I love the classic, the bad guys have the good guys surrounded and choose not to fire when they could kill them. But still, that was still a cool fight scene. I love the way that Sabine fights. Finally, I cannot understand Baylan's skull. They better give him at least a 5-minute monologue in the last episode to explain himself. Do you guys feel they will be able to have a satisfying ending with one more episode? Thanks a lot. Looking forward to the next episode.
No way this can be satisfying unless it's like a 2-hour episode.
A lot of our emails about Baylan Skull. Let me just say this right now.
That's fair.
He's amazing. He's so good. Again, he's in a different show that's like deep and nuanced, and I just want to like follow him and be like, tell me what's going on.
The subject line of that email, which I did not read, which is, who is Baylan Skull? ?
Yeah, I guess it's frustrating also because we know the actor has passed away.
If they had plans for him,
they're gonna have to figure it out. It's a little frustrating that like presumably if they don't answer that question in the next episode, it will never be answered. Which you know,
or they'll recast. I mean,
they could recast. Yeah,
Michael Gambon I think an example that like Michael Gambon just passed away, right? And he played Dumbledore.
Not going to use him.
No.
That is
that's
the
what
worst.
I'm saying.
That is the worst recommendation, Kat. That's also really disrespectful. No. Why would you do that?
You guys are worse. The worst. No, but he's a great example of like the recasting. Because who was before? It was
Richard Harris.
Oh, who was Richard Harris? And they like I was going to say Richard Hatch. Either,
and he died. Yeah, that was why they recast.
Oh my God, Kat.
Brutal. Just very. I appreciate it. Okay.
You guys are the worst.
Yeah, we are. Andrew writes, I'm not going to read all of this, Andrew. I'm sorry you wrote a long letter and you say, sorry, this got a little longer than intended.
Let's be clear. Dan will read all of it. He's just not going to read it all out loud.
I don't have a lot of people. So sorry this got a little longer than intended. I don't have a lot of people to talk about Star Wars with, so y'all are bearing the brunt. He talks specifically about a Star Wars arc that has, like, it doesn't really sit within itself. Like, it's part of a larger thing, whether it's TV or a movie or a trilogy. He thinks Ahsoka ends with Thrawn jumping back to the original galaxy, which we already speculated, and maybe there's a Thrawn-themed season of The Mandalorian before the movie.
Weird. That would be interesting. Is that, do we know that? Do we know what is or isn't coming? We don't know.
We know there's a movie.
We have no idea.
But we don't know what's beyond that. He also points
out Boba Fett and Vespas.
Another theme ongoing is that masters die, like Obi-Wan, the Emperor, Qui-Gon, Luke, and TLJ, Snoke. So maybe that's Baylan is going to get his toast, basically. He says he's my favorite antagonist since I first read Heir to the Empire.
Mm.
We have a long way to go if we get there at all, but if Shin is the new Mara Jade, I can't decide what's more likely. Ezra kills Baylan, Shin becomes the Grand Admiral's hand, seeks revenge, eventually turns to the light side, or Thrawn kills Baylan, Shin turns to the light side, kills Thrawn at the end of the third unit, whatever that is. As far as the pacing goes, I bet it's due to Filoni-style pacing combined with the thought they have 8 episodes. For the first act of the Thrawn arc, they don't really feel like they need to get things moving to the last 3 or 4 episodes, coincidentally, about the length of a movie. And then he has a couple footnotes, you know, like Solo, Andor, and Rogue One are kind of don't really follow the larger unit pattern. And then he mentions that the Chimera loading the Chimera for 6 was day 1, episode 7 is day 2, 8 is day 3, and they jump back to the end. And then speculates perhaps either that or Shin is the new Rook and sides with Thrawn until she doesn't. Have we seen Baylan or Shin handling a special knife at any point?
I do agree that I didn't give a lot of credence to this episode, the idea that Shin could essentially be Mara Jade, but I think her it's not great. I know, but if she flees from this and then, she hasn't portrayed herself to be the sharpest of Jedi. Again, all the very basic questions to her. Yeah.
She is, they have set her up to be like, kind of cut off, and now you could spiral off and do anything, right? Like, you could join the good guys, you could join the bad guys, you could be a bounty hunter. Like, you know, I'm reminded of, like, when Asajj Ventress gets fired, and she's like, well, then I'm going to do whatever I want, and that's going to leave a lot of burnt houses in the wake.
I do think to the emo we got, though, is, like, I kind of want to see her join up with Thrawn first and just become a little more evil before she goes down that path.
Do you think, I mean... So at the end there, does she get on the gunship or does she run away after the
runs
no,
away
she
afterwards.
Does not. They get on the gunship and they leave her.
Yeah.
And then she's just there and if they see her, they show her getting on her howler.
Oh, that's right. You're on her
howler. And
she away.
Drives away. Rides away. You don't drive howler. Walks
away.
You drive a naughty RV, but you ride a howler.
What's so bad about the RV?
They're great. I love them.
They're not naughty? Okay. No. Yeah, so like Ahsoka tries to get her to like stand down too, right?
Yeah.
And she's like,
yeah,
which I thought was a very Ahsoka move, but also did not really think that was going to happen.
I felt like she could have used like one more word there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like make a case here.
Yeah, I think that character needs
maybe ask a question, something. Right? Like,
Joe, who wrote last week with subject line, "What does Baylan want?" replies to that this week and saying, still asking the question. We didn't seem to get any more clarity in this episode. When he sent Shin off, it seemed like he was saying goodbye because he had other plans. I thought running into Ahsoka again was unintentional. I dig Baylan, but I wish going into the final episode that we knew more about what he's up to.
I agree. I think that Ahsoka interaction was unexpected. I for a second thought he expected it.
He has a line there that he's like, basically, I'm here to delay you
yes.
because I want Shin to win. Right.
But It was also interesting that he, because I'm glad he said that, because essentially this time around versus the last combat, he drew first, or at least he didn't have any hesitation with drawing. He may not have drawn first, I forget, versus the first time he seemed so disappointed they had a fight.
He does he does draw first here. I noted it when I was watching,
Yeah, so, I am worried that we're going to be majorly disappointed by this character in the last episode.
Yeah, and then it is disappointing to think that they may not be able to bring that home, because he has been so interesting, and I wish he had been the primary antagonist in some ways, and they had left Thrawn either out of it or towards the very end.
He's actually more interesting than Thrawn. Like, he upstages Thrawn right now.
Yeah, I mean, just because we don't, there's a more of a mystery about his character, whereas we know Thrawn's motivations.
And, you know, Thrawn is a great character. I felt a little bit like, you know, they have this scene here where he's like, it's hard because Thrawn is exciting when he wins. And they've created a story where he can't really win. You know, Thrawn is, we see Thrawn as this mastermind, and he outthinks people, and he has, you know, he's 10 steps ahead, and he kind of doesn't, like, it's like they don't know how do you write the story where the bad guy is a super genius, but also our you know, like, our heroes don't get murdered right away.
That was one of the things that worked so well in the Thrawn trilogy, the original Thrawn trilogy, was that, like, the rebels are legit on their back foot for, like, the first two and a half books. Like, it is bad news for them. They are getting, like, beaten at every turn. And I would love to see that, but it's hard to establish that level of threat in a single movie. I think that's the struggle here, is I feel like he's such a good character. I mean, if anything, you want to sort of, you know, to allude to another Disney property, I feel like you kind of want him to have, like, the Thanos treatment, where he's like, he's here and he's there and he's kind of lurking in the background and he's doing these things. You're like, what is this guy up to? He seems like he's got this all together, and I have it really feel like he basically is winning, right? Like, that's kind of what is interesting about him. But if you just bring up and he's like, well, he's scary, but we buckled down and beat him, you know, it's like,
the power of teamwork overcame
his story,
you know. Super brain.
And one last email from Michael, a different Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Michael writes a subject line: Ahsoka is missing something. Hi, Star Wars pals. I am enjoying Ahsoka, but I feel like it's missing something. Just like the Book of Boba Fett, I think it needs two episodes of another Star Wars TV show to mix things up. My choice would be the 2D Clone Wars micro series. The episodes would only be about 3 minutes long, but it would be cool to see Ahsoka, Thrawn, Sabine, and the rest in 2D animation. Some of them,
with no dialogue.
Sabine and Ahsoka have both appeared in 2D animation in the, what was it called, Star Wars Destiny or whatever. There were a bunch of shorts featuring female Star Wars characters that are little, like, 5-minute shorts. What Star Wars show would you like to see interrupt this season of Ahsoka? May the Force be with you.
It's Andor. The answer will always be Andor.
Droids. In trouble.
We had that
again
today.
That is basically what it was.
It was the first part of the episode.
I'm going to take a bold chance to say what I want to interrupt this is an episode of Rebels. But, like, a good one. I don't know. It was weird to me that they did establish the Mandalorian timeline here, because, like, so this is post season 3, so we're going in the episode. This is in the order of the seasons we've seen before, but, like, very much treated like, oh, that's that thing that's happening way over down the street.
Well,
we're not concerned.
They even talk about those, like, Captiva, of just sort of like the fact that they can't get any rebel support implies they're at the Outer Rim, and it is sort of an outer consideration. So that's not so surprising to me, but.
I want more. I mean, like, if you're going to do, I guess my feeling is, if you're going to do the thing where, like, this is all part of a shared universe, kind of like Marvel's done it, like, I kind of want you to lean into it. Whereas here it's like, oh, cameo, drip drab. Like, it's like, go one way or the other, I feel like. Andor, I feel like, has gone the other way, right? It's like, we're going to, you know, we got Forrest Whitaker and we got Genevieve O'Reilly, but we're, like, really not even concerned with what's happening anywhere else. We were concerned with basically it's Rogue One and it's us. Whereas this is, I don't mind a shared universe, but I just, the Mandalorian really didn't call out for it. And then they sort of expanded it to that point. Book of Boba Fett did not do a great job of capitalizing on it. And then I feel like so much of this show, I would enjoy more if it didn't need to tip its hat to that stuff. I don't know. Anyway,
Well, one I more feel, episode, yeah, and then we're on to what are we on to next after that? It's Knights of the New Republic
or Skeleton Crew.
Skeleton Crew. Yeah, this is gonna be cool, right? It's Old Republic.
No, Skeleton Crew.
No,
is,
Skeleton
is
Crew is
same.
Now. You're thinking yep. of the Acolyte.
Acolyte. There,
we, yeah,
Skeleton Crew is Jude Law and a bunch of kids are like steal like a spaceship.
And that
maybe
sounds great.
He's a Jedi. I don't know. It's very. It has a somewhat like Goonies sounding theme
Wait,
to it.
Do we, have
80s?
A, we don't have a date. I just checked Wikipedia.
Everything
Skeleton
got pushed
Crew
back
is
a strike.
Okay, so it is scheduled to be released in 2023, but I'll note it that we don't have a date for it.
It
and there's not. A
I
lot
don't
of
think it will happen this year. Okay. I think it's been pushed back with everything else on the Disney slate because of the strike.
Gotcha.
Basically,
and it's probably done, but they probably don't want. They want
Pretty
it
close
stretch
to
out.
Yeah,
they want to stretch out how big a gap they have with nothing, right?
I would guess we see it in early next year in the spring or so. But
okay.
Hard to say. I don't know that there is another season of... I think there's another
so
season
we might have a,
coming,
we might have
we
a significant break in this podcast, and I don't have to talk to you guys for a while.
You don't have to, but you will.
Hey, Tony.
Is also a great time to remind everybody out there that the upcoming October is...
Is it October yet?
It's almost October. Maybe by the time you hear this, it is October. And October is the Incomparable Membership Month. So this is the time of year.
What?
When we remind you about how you can support this very podcast, and that's by becoming a member of the Incomparable. There's a couple ways you can do that. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge and support this podcast directly. You can do that by going to theincomparable.com/members, where you can sign up. You can choose which shows on the network you would like to give your support. And if you check the box for A Complicated Profession, your contribution
Is that this
comes
show?
To us. That's this
That's
show.
This show. This That's show? This show. A Complicated Profession?
Yes. A show title that is increasingly...
confusing to explain to people.
I don't know.
It's okay.
I really kind of lean into that.
Yep.
But it's
Dan. That was Dan named the podcast before Kat and I were involved. So you know,
want to rename the podcast? I will entertain.
No,
ideas.
No.
We just want to give you a hard time for the name you chose.
Yeah.
If you listen to other podcasts in the Incomparable Network, you can also check the boxes for them. Your contribution gets shared equally by all the shows that you want to support. As thank you for supporting us, members receive extras. So many extras. There are several exclusive podcast feeds, including an ad-free special edition of The Incomparable Mothership, bootlegs of our live recording sessions, a special feed full of bonus episodes that only members get to hear, and access to a fun members-only Discord. New members, if you haven't signed up for it yet, you're a new member, you also receive free Incomparable swag.
Wow, Dan, that sounds like a lot of, you know, stuff the Incomparable Network is giving to people. Are we doing anything in our podcast for people?
I'm glad you asked, Tony. We are doing a special member-only episode, so if you're a member, you get to hear it, in which we ask each other Star Wars trivia questions as pulled from Star Wars Trivial Pursuit.
Wow,
what
are we
going to
be
wrong?
Really polished and professional, or do you imagine that we'll break down into arguing and berating each other pretty quickly?
Pretty quickly.
Have you listened to this show?
I don't know. It's hard for me to hear what happens on the show with all the crosstalk. Yeah.
We're also going to figure out the rules because I don't want to do 2 hours of just asking Dan trivia questions while he gets them all right. So we'll have to figure out the rules.
If Dan, well, obviously, Kat, if you or I gets a question right, we get a point. Dan only loses points.
Yes.
Start at Dan, a certain number of points?
You start at 10 points, but every time you get one wrong, you lose a point.
I don't like this. Anyway.
Well, it's not about what you like. It's about the members, Dan. That's who it's about.
If you would like to hear that episode and get all of those other special features, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 per month. Annual cool events are available as well. Hey, if you're already a member, it's really easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return, including some free Incomparable swag. So if you'd like to support us, once again, go to incomparable.com/members to sign up. We really appreciate it. This show is something we do for fun. We would just sit around and talk about Star Wars anyways, even if we weren't recording.
Yeah. Yeah. Your money motivates us to record it.
Yeah. Although I do sometimes forget we're actually recording a podcast and I feel like we're just like hanging out and talking. And I think that comes across in the show.
Yeah. I don't. Crosstalk. What are you talking about?
That's the new name of our podcast. Crosstalk.
We will. Your member contributions will not reduce the amount of crosstalk. Just warning you now. It's not a promise we can make.
We've tried, and you know, I think it's all about coming to grips with who we are and what our strengths and weaknesses are.
Mostly weaknesses. And,
well, you know, some of our weaknesses are strengths. That's but very... not most of them.
Okay, most of them are just weaknesses. Some of our strengths, yep. Also weaknesses.
Yeah, that's true. It's a complicated life.
It's a complicated, it's a profession.
Complicated profession.
And with that, we have reached the end of this week's episode. I'd like to thank my co-host, as always. Kat Banish, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you all. Everyone have a marvelous night, or afternoon, or morning, depending on when you listen to this podcast.
Would you like to name every possible hour at which they could be listening to it?
1 o'clock, okay. And 2
Tony Sindelar, always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for chatting, Kat. Thank you for listening, nerds. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We will be back with one final episode covering the season series finale of Ahsoka next week. So look forward to
it's
that.
It's just titled Baylan School.
Oh, Baylan School. Baylan High School? Until then, may the force be with you.